Thank you, Gloria. We have about 220 or 30 people, or PLC members, and every 2 weeks we have these informal calls for 30 minutes. It doesn't take too much time.
Lou's at Cary University at Buffalo.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome, Lou.
How are you?
We do these calls. Yes, we're here. We're just getting started. We have these calls every 2 weeks. The next one will be on October 23rd. And in this cycle, we've actually done about 95 of these, but this cycle we're talking to some of our great grantees who have done some wonderful things. And we're trying to get an idea of what different people are doing around the country, people who have had programs and maybe fine-tuning their programs and how they're recruiting and that type of thing. Today we're going to have Florida State College of Jacksonville. We always start out by looking at news from Washington, which GLO usually does, but we have no news. As everyone knows, it's shut down. but we did get a question during the week, and the question was, we were awarded a grant, and we haven't gotten our paperwork yet, and we haven't heard anything from grants and disbursements, and what do we do? And they're not going to take our money away, are they? And that was the question. And the response is, and of course, we're not EPA. We work with EPA, and we've worked with this program since it started. The money on these programs is for people who had awards this last spring and are just starting. That money has been appropriated, so your grant is good. Also, in the grant conditions, you can retroactively spend money. So that's okay, but the grants have been awarded, and we basically advise everyone to go ahead with everything as if the government is not closed, and they'll catch up when you get back. The question of whether you have progress reports due and what to do there, I would go ahead on your normal schedule, and then if it was due during the shutdown, of course, you couldn't submit it, and all the emails are down for federal employees, but just hold on to it and do your progress reports as usual, do your accounting as usual, your expenses and disbursements and all of that, and they'll catch up to it. Those of you who were not at the annual meeting, Joe Bruss said they're planning on a new round of RFPs, and hopefully in November. Now with the shutdown, they tend to be late rather than early on their RFPs, so my guess it's going to be pushed from November probably to December, could even be January. We'll be doing, every 2 weeks, these conference calls, and post-session notes, so we'll keep everyone informed of that. Another thing, it's not necessarily from Washington, but it's something we want to announce, and GLO sent out an announcement about this. I want to reiterate it because it's fairly important. I'm going to put it in the notes, which you'll probably receive tomorrow or Friday. The Greatest Institute, it's our sister program, CCHST, it's a Community College Consortia for Health and Safety Training, and the Partnership for Environmental Development, Environmental Training. Every year, they do a boot camp, and it's a great opportunity. If you've got a program, you're starting a program, and you're going to be doing health and safety training, they have a boot camp. Now, this one isn't until June of next year, but it fills up. They've got very limited positions open, and the thing about it is they pay everything. They pay, $300 worth of airline, $20 a day per diem, all your expenses, hotels, everything. And it's basically to qualify you as a wayside instructor. They cover 40-hour wayside and DOT confined space. And there's an application you can make to them, and I'm going to include those in the notes. Now, if you think you're interested, you may, and if you've got training capability and you're going to do it in-house or your community college in particular, I would get a hold of this in the notes, and I would call Patty Thompson, e-write or email her, or just fill out the application and send it to her. But you need to do it right away because they'll probably fill up quite soon. GLO, do you have anything to add to that?
The dates are June 2nd through the 13th, and it's going to be held right here in Davenport, Iowa, which is where I'm located. It's going to be at our college's rescue center and also partly in the classroom that's here in my office area. But like Mike said, it does fill up quickly. It is very popular train-the-trainer, and with that, not only do you get the training, but you also get access to copyrighted HMTRI curriculum. So I don't know. If you're interested, just like Mike said, register soon.
Yeah, and I'll get those notes out tomorrow or Friday so you can look at them and see if it's relevant for you and act on that as soon as possible. Glo, do you have anything, any other announcements we want to make, or anyone that want to make any quick announcements?
The only thing, I've been working on the post-meeting things from the grantee meeting. I just finished the session notes today, and I'm going to be sending those out to everybody that was in attendance. And then I've also been gathering everyone's PowerPoints, and these session notes, they're all going to go on the Brownfields Toolbox. We're going to make a separate space, just like we did last year, to house all that information. So once that gets finished and I have gathered everything I need to gather, I'll put a note out on the listserv and let everyone know that it's there.
Okay. And last, the last PLC, we talked about the annual meeting, and we did send out some post-session notes. And if you have any questions, you could email them to me. My name is msenyu@aol.com. We want to get started with what Florida State has done in Jacksonville. It's a great program. Pam and Sarah were first granted a program in 2011, and they obviously did a good job because they re-upped in 2013. Now, usually there's about 70 or so applications, and all these applications are very competitive. So because you get a grant once, doesn't give you any advantage in getting a grant again. In fact, it works against you. In recent times, about half the grants that they award, about 10 or 12, are given to new grantees and about half to exemplary former grantees who have really good programs. And of course, Florida State has done that. So, Pam, do you want to give us some background on your program and run through your recruitment and number of cycles and length of program and those kind of things?
Sure, absolutely. Every chance we get a chance to brag, we're always happy about that. As Mike said, my name is Pam. I'm the program manager of our grant, and I also have Sarah Ashbrook here. She's our project coordinator. Sarah was also a student in our first class, so it makes her a little bit extra special. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first of all, Mike, I'd kind of like to tell you that we've actually been awarded three grants. We were awarded in 2009. We got the Brownfield R grant for 3 years, which is $500,000. During that time frame, we trained 170 people, and we had an 85% job placement rating. So we are very pleased about that. Sarah pretty much had coordinated the next grant, which was awarded to us in 2010. You want to talk a little bit about that, Sarah?
Yeah, that grant, my name is Sarah Ashbrook, and the second grant that we received, it was awarded in 2011, and it's a two-year grant. We trained 80 individuals, and the placement rate for that, I'm still doing my reporting, is 77%. So we're really happy with that, and we'll close that out in January.
And the upcoming grant, which we will start in January, will propose to train 60 people. So that's pretty much the history of our training.
We'd like to go ahead, and we were going to talk about just a few key points about, basically we're going to talk about curriculum, our recruiting, and then our job placement were kind of the key things that we were going to talk about. Pretty much our curriculum, everybody knows that you kind of have a baseline that you have to start with, and ours is very similar with the exception, I think, of we offer the Florida Stormwater Erosion and Sediment Control Inspector training. as well as we offer a couple of, I think, additional OSHA courses that, you know, we are OTI now, so we kind of have the, you know, the leisure of inputting a couple of extra OSHA classes. We also offer some EPA courses, the HAZMAT technician, and then their version of the HAZWOP for the health and safety. So all together in a package, we offer 21 certifications. And I think one of the big things about our curriculum and about the student success is from the beginning, Pam had, you know, had focused on presentation, and we put all of the certifications are all printed out, put in an individual portfolio that each student can showcase to the employers whenever they apply, and then just so it's kind of a, you know, solid curriculum base. I don't know, Pam, if you want to talk about any of the training and how you kind of started with the curriculum.
Well, we started an 8-week training program, and we sort of treated it like a job. We had them go all day, every day, 8 hours a week, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. We figured if we can make it through, you know, the 40 hours, get there on time, you know, and do what they're supposed to do, that their likelihood of getting into a job and staying in a job is pretty good. So basically, we didn't waste any time. We would get them in, we'd get them out, and we never lost the fact of the matter that this is all about job placement. So infused into our curriculum, almost every hour in the hour, our instructors would give motivational, you know, talks about getting a job, keeping a job, where to look for a job. And then we infuse our training with different types of career training, too. So nobody ever forgot why they were there, and it's all about getting a job. And that's pretty much what's kept our numbers high. And we're up to 3 months of training now. We have added some training, and once again, it's still all day, every day. Our retention rate is like nearly 100% in the past 5 years, which is just incredible. But that comes from a very, very hard screening process. And as far as the curriculum also, we had a lot of the curriculum already developed because we're a health and safety institute. But if we didn't have it developed due to time management, we didn't try to reinvent the wheel. We go to the Brownfields toolbox, we'd find curriculums. We go to the NIOSH site, and also there's a lot of free educational information on the OSHA website as well. So, you know, we was able to save time and have good curriculum as well, curriculum that's been tried and true. Also, we incorporated the Nook e-reader. Instead of giving them a great big pile of books, we found to go out and buy this Nook e-reader was almost as, you know, cost-effective as getting all the books, and it's certainly a lot less work, too. But the e-reader has been a total success, and it's multifaceted in its successes. Not only does it help these students that come in that they're afraid of technology, by the time they graduate from our program, they have a good handle on the Nook, so therefore they're not afraid to venture into other aspects of technology. And also, if you don't have a job, 9 chances out of 10, you don't have the Internet. We have too many people to try to call them when we have a job lead, so all of our job leads are sent out via email and put on a Facebook page. So now these students, they can go to McDonald's or Starbucks or wherever and find a hotspot, get onto the Wi-Fi, and we truly believe this e-reader has helped us with our job placement numbers as well. And plus, if that's not good enough, now when they go on the job, they can take this e-reader with them and have all their curriculum to refer to and the regulations. So we found it's just been win-win any way you look at it. And now the e-readers are cheaper than ever. You can get one that's black and white, and it only costs $68, and that was far cheaper than the books that we were buying. So we feel infusing the e-reader in with our curriculum has just been a total win-win situation. Let me see, what else? Is there any questions as far as the curriculum goes?
Do you put everything in PDF form then, evidently?
We put everything into PDF form, that's correct. And it works just fine.
And then you give them the e-readers when they graduate as a graduate.
We do. We wrote it in our grant to give it to them. And, you know, we wrote it in our budget line to give it to them. You know, because
it
does
take out insurance. Do you do anything with insurance? Or people have always been concerned about them dropping them or losing them? Or
no.
Like,
you know, we know that was a little bit of risky business, but I would tell you,
I've had a few people that have damaged or broken. So what we did is that's kind of written in that we have, you know, we have a few extra that are ordered depending on the size. Like when we have more students, we order additional. But I really have only ordered, I think, 5, and then those were really kind of in place for the instructors were going to be using them. But I had 2 people break them, an agreement saying that they're going to be responsible individuals and so on and so forth. And we really luckily haven't had a problem with that.
Could you elaborate on your recruitment process? It sounds like it's how do you screen, and who's your target group? How do you go about doing that?
Well, our target group is veterans, single mothers, homeless people. I mean, it's really fantastic when we get somebody homeless into a job. And who else?
I think anyone kind of, we're in the downtown and the urban core area of Jacksonville, so we kind of are fortunate that our, even like some of the students were right near the bus station and things here, so we can reach out to kind of our immediate community. And also, like, we work really closely with the homeless veteran shelters that are here. We have about 4 shelters within of the school. So we kind of, you know, anyone that's underemployed or unemployed is pretty accessible here where we're at.
Mm-hmm. So we've had no problem with outreach. In fact, we get hundreds of applications. It's hard for us to have to turn all these people down. So basically, WorkSource, the Veterans Centers, and graduate referrals is another source of how we get our participants. In fact, that's a great source right there. And our screening process, you know, really it's all about the screening, because the participants that you select, if you have a pretty dang good idea that they're going to, you know, they want a job and they'll get a job, then you're going to have program success. So we put a lot of effort into that, and we have a 6-step screening process. Number 1 is our application. The application is 6 pages. So some of the things we're looking for is how well did they complete the package, how neat is the package, did they follow up on it, and then we have a lot of questions like, do you have a driver's license, are you willing to travel, and that type of thing. So once we get their application and we review it, if we feel that we want to move on with them, then we will call and do a one-on-one phone interview. And we have a formatted checklist of questions that we ask. Once again, we want to make sure they have a valid driver's license. We have employers that will hire somebody that has felonies, but they will not hire somebody that does not have a valid driver's license. So we feel that that's one of our little keys to success in job placement, is that we want people with driver's license. We ask if they're willing to travel, because I'd say about 40% of our people get hired out of state. We found our niche is emergency response. That's what our students seem to like to do. And so we ask that question several times, ever, are you willing to travel? We even make them initial, you know, in the check block when we do the one-on-one personal face-to-face interview. So once they did the application, the one-on-one phone interview, step 3 is we do an orientation for potential selectees. During that orientation, we could get up to 100 people, anywhere from 20 to 100 people. That's where we'll do questions and answers, talk more about the program. And then we set up panel interviews. Maybe 3 of our staff members will interview each person. And then during that orientation, we will have them just do, like, don and doff the SCBA tank, maybe put on a suit. That's when we'll find out perhaps if they're claustrophobic. And we'll ask some medical questions at that point in time, too. The next step after that is we schedule a drug screening for the whole group. We do an on-the-spot right here at the college. We just have a rep from the lab corps come in here, and we do it. and we knock it out within about a half an hour to an hour. And then, so based on those other steps, if they pass the drug screening and the other four steps, we'll schedule them for a test at a TABE test for adult basic education. And honestly, we just do it at the sixth grade level because we found when we do it higher, we sometimes screen ourselves out of participants. And we've never found that to be a problem as far as job placement goes. And then the final step is our final selection. So maybe out of 40, 50 people, we select about 15. So by the time that, you know, we review the application, we talk to them on the phone, we talk to them in person, and our staff has gotten to know them, we have a pretty good idea of the participants we're going to select. Is there any questions?
You know, one thing you're pointing out, that the best grantees that have the best placement rates like yourself and best retention especially, they don't base their screening so much on taking a test and filling out forms. It's almost more personal. And
yes,
sitting down and looking at them face-to-face and really determining their motivation and determination. That almost seems to be most important.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and that's a question that we were constantly asking them over and over again. Are you willing to work? Do you have a genuine interest in doing environmental cleanup?
You want to make sure that the participants aren't just coming to do, you know, to do the class, to do another class. We have a lot of people that are, you know, these sort of, they continue to take certification after certification after certification, and they're not trying to get out of that sort of system. They want to continue to take classes. And us being at the college, we really would like for people to get involved in higher education, but for us the main thing is, yes, we would like you to go to school, but you need to work first. And so that's kind of from the very beginning. We don't focus on trying to get them to start college. We want them to finish the training, get to work, and then by all means, if this training sparks some sort of interest in further education, to do classes, you know, at their leisure when they can. But that work is, you know, that getting a job is the main goal of this.
One interesting thing about Jackson State is many of the grantees we've talked to on previous calls have linked to construction trades, or they've linked to young community developers or conservation corps. But you're on your own, aren't you? You're kind of out there, but you're linked to the state college. So it's a little bit different model, isn't it?
Yes, we've always been kind of standalone for the most part.
Yeah, we partner with a lot of individuals, but we kind of focus the majority of the work we kind of do here. And it's kind of a good thing for us. The students know they can always come back here, and we're not kind of sending them off to, hey, you need to go to this other agency and take care of this. We partner with them, but they always kind of come back here for any kind of assistance.
But you are part of a larger organization. You mentioned you've got a health and safety institute. So in a sense, this is an appendage onto a bigger organization. Is that correct?
Yes. And within this college, we have workforce representatives, and then we have other grants that we work with as well, too.
Yeah, we reach out. There's logistics grants and things that are here, so we definitely try to, you know, work within the college for sure.
So this is an interesting model for those who may want to look up with a college or an institute that's got health and safety activities. You don't necessarily have to go into the construction trades, but you might want to take this alternative, which is really a different path, but just as effective, maybe more, because your graduates are coming right out and going into environmental technology.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, and it's a wonderful thing, it's called the Brownfields Florida Brownfields Association, and you've been pretty active, haven't you, in participating in that program?
Yes, and they've been very good about reaching out to us as well. Ken Penix, he was our city's brownfield administrator, but now he's working for another environmental committee, but he's very much involved in the Florida Brownfields Association. But they reach out to us, and for the past 3 years, we've taken graduates to the Brownfields meeting because they do have over 400 environmental employers. So it's really awesome that our graduates can kind of meet and greet with all these environmental employers. And we did that, what, in 2010, 2011?
Yeah, we had one. They did one here in Jacksonville, so it was perfect. We got to take the whole class. They did one in Orlando. When we went to Orlando, we had, you know, we couldn't get everybody there, but we took a group of about five there,
yeah.
And it's a good networking opportunity for the students. They can really see that there are a lot of Brownfields jobs and resources, you know, and not just here in Jacksonville or in Florida, but it's all over because people come, you know, from all over to participate in it.
And this year, it's going to be October 27th, isn't it? The 27th to the 30th?
Yeah, in West Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm. what I would suggest, a nice place to go, I believe, and I looked at the site, anyone could go to that, and anyone else that's on this call or will be reading these notes, you can go to the site, and it's, I believe for nonprofit, non-members, it's about $250, and I think there was a $129 hotel fee. But if you're in a position to go to this, it might be something you may want to consider because they do have, don't they have exhibits, and they do have some really good sessions. But what's really neat about the Brownfields Association in Florida, and you may also want to look in your own state, there's about five states we've identified that have Brownfields Associations. None of them are quite as big as Florida's, but when you think about it, every stakeholder that's involved in this environmental work is going to be in one building at one time. Now, you've basically done your needs assessment, right, by getting the participant list of this meeting. It's awesome and a great opportunity. And those of you who, anyone who can go or learn more about it, in fact, I believe you can go online and get notes or participants from prior years. Just go to the Florida Brownfields Association site, Google that, and I understand they've been very considerate of graduates of this program in trying to get them jobs and interview sessions, and I think some of them have even done interviews right at the meeting, I believe.
Yeah, right. Whenever we brought the students, the last one in Orlando, they did, all the students brought resumes, and it's just good for the students and for the employers too. A lot of those companies are also going out for, you know, they're applying for grants as well. So if you've got someone that's looking to do an assessment grant and they want to hire from a base of trained students, then they're more likely to contact us and vice versa. And if they meet the students in person, that's even better.
I mean, we have one graduate, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember the company, but they totally took her under their wing. They was going to buy her new professional clothes. And
yeah, they were based out of South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have, like you said, not everybody there is just, you know, they're part of the Brownfields Association in Florida, but we have, you know, they have companies that are based in other areas. There was a couple employers that were from North Carolina and South Carolina, so still within the region.
And I expect there's some national people like Arrow may be there, national recruiters that may be there
mm-hmm.
also. For those who are not in Florida or even in Region 4, you might want to just Google your state and then put Brownfields Association and see if you come up with, I think Kansas has one. There's several of the states have them. And whether or not it's real active, you might find out who's participating and then see if you might be able to get involved in it because it's a great organization, and they want to help the graduates, and they want to help these programs. And I think they might even offer scholarships for travel and free admission and that type of thing. So
they did for us, they did a scholarship when they were here in Jacksonville that we didn't have to pay for any of the students to attend. I just contacted them directly and, you know, just put in a request and, and they let all the students get in for free. So it was they normally have at least one day that's a community day where individuals can get in. You just have to contact them.
You know, and they've helped us, give us advice in our curriculum selection. Actually, Nandra Weeks and her team from GeoSynTech has come in, and they've taught some of our classes in gratis. So they've really done a lot for our program. Like I said, Ken Penix, he's always been involved with us. Even though he's not the city's Brownfields administrator, he's still very much involved with us, too.
Yeah, we work with Miles Bellog quite a bit, who's going
Miles
to
too.
Good people. Does anyone have any questions of Jacksonville? It's been a great review of your program. We really thanks for coming on and telling us about your program. I'm going to try to summarize some of these things and share it with the whole group of people, and I'll also make sure I get that application in those, incorporate those in the notes. And if no one has any other questions, we want to thank you, and hopefully we'll see everyone on the 23rd. And good luck at the Brownfields meeting.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
Thanks, everyone.